On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon to you, Namibia. It's a Friday kind of feeling here at Eagle FM, and you're tuned into On the Radar, where we don't just report the news, we unpack it, challenge it, and give it the context it deserves. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and for the next 90 minutes, we are diving into the stories shaping your world as we cruise towards the weekend. Now, whether you're ripping up that last email, heading out of town, or just taking a breather, we've got your Friday fix of headlines, insight, and real talk. It's been a week of bold moves, big money, and even bigger cushions, from investment sheaves to lions on the loose. Now, before we unplug and reset, let's hear what's on the radar this Friday. Now, the top stories you can expect today is big deals, bigger questions. Well, Pepsto gets the green light to take over Big Daddy Clothing. So what does this mean for competition? And can Namibian suppliers stay in the game? Farming the future. The Namibia Agronomic Board pledges 250 million Namibian dollars to supercharge the crop and citrus value chains. Will this grow jobs and boost exports? Well, let's find out. Tariffs and tensions. SACU pushes back on Trump's unilateral tariffs, calling for fair trade fair for Africa's least developed countries. Expect that and more in today's news bulletin. Plus, we want to hear your thoughts because you are not just listening, you're part of the story. So call us in studio on 083-288-401 to weigh in on today's stories or challenge the headlines. So stay with us as we ease into the weekend with news that's sharp, relevant, and unapologetically Namibian. This is On the Radar, your news, your voice, your perspective. First up on our agenda, the South African Customs Union, SACU, which includes Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Namibia and South Africa, has raised concerns about new import tariffs introduced by the United States in early April. Now, the tariffs were announced by current President Donald Trump during a Liberation Day event that apply to goods coming from many countries, including those in SACU. For example, Lesotho's exports to the U.S. are now facing tariffs of up to 50%, making it more difficult for the country to compete in the American market. Now, following a recent meeting, SACU's chairperson of the council, that is Finance Minister Erica Shafuda, said the union is urging the U.S. to engage in mutually beneficial trade. She called for differential treatment that would allow least developed countries, also known as LDCs, and those eligible under the African Growth Opportunity Act, ANGOA, to be exempted from these new tariffs. Now, SACU emphasized its commitment to engaging customs fairly within the region and supporting ongoing economic development across Africa. Well, the question is this the best route for SACU to go? And what alternatives could SACU realistically explore to reduce its dependency on the U.S. market? Are there emerging markets that could absorb the potential trade? Well, let's interrogate this with trade analyst Rodney Hobb. Good afternoon, Mr. Rodney Wive, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Ms. Happy, and how are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm good.
So the Southern African Customs Union, SACU, recently had a meeting at which SACU's chairperson of the council, Finance Minister Erica Shafuda, said the union is urging the U.S. to engage in mutually beneficial trade. She further called for differential treatment that would allow least developed countries and those eligible under the ANGOA to be exempted from these new tariffs. Now, is this the best route for SACU to go?
Yes, I think it is the best route for SACU to go. Ever since the ANGOA trade agreement was established, I think in 2011, there was an extension for it to run up until now, which is 2025. Mm-hmm. And in that period, there was a hiatus in terms of where the negotiations are going and what should happen should this agreement come to a lapse, because it provides a tariff-free entry of products from SACCO countries into the U.S. market.
Yeah.
When the agreement came to us, before it even ended, various calls were made that the countries are engaging with the U.S. and possibly to also negotiate the agreement at a reciprocal basis. So what does that mean? The current agreement is only in favor of SACCO countries, which means that their goods can enter the U.S. without tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many things have triggered that the U.S. wanted the same type of benefits from its various global partners and imposed a blanket 10% tariff.
Yeah.
But then the countries that are enjoying the tariffs should also come to the table and tell the U.S. that when they ship their goods to SACCO, then they will also equally give them the same privileges. And then currently the U.S. is only trading on what we call as MFN rate or the most favored nation,
mm-hmm.
which means it's treated the same way as any other WTO member. And the tariffs are actually high. Some products are protected within the SACCO region, which is your textile, poultry, automotive. These sectors fetch tariffs that are even up to 40%, you know, 48% in some segments. Yes, there is needs to engage talks. But at the bilateral or multilateral level, I'm not sure how they will take this further. But just to give a little bit of insight, I know that the President of South Africa is traveling to the U.S.
Indeed.
We hope that these discussions form basis part of these interactions.
Mm. Now, Mr. Rodney, could you also break down for us the economic implications of the U.S. imposing such high tariffs up to 50% on exports on countries like Lesotho?
It will be, at first, there's a variance in terms of how these tariffs are applied.
Yeah.
We are trading as a customs union with the U.S. It means that we are amongst proximity to each other. When we trade with the U.S., we don't have a differentiation that the tariffs should be different from one country to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you find that the shortcuts businesses would want to do within the region, because it means in the southern tip of southern Africa, businesses have more than one place where they're established already, because that's how fruitful our environment is. We are a union. We're not individualistic.
Yeah.
And I think the U.S. first was supposed to approach it from that angle, a more unitary tariff imposition if they had to. But I think in the current structure, it's not favorable for us. It will make our products, firstly, it will bring a trade conflict amongst us,
mm-hmm.
as everybody will try to cater for their own interest, unless there's a concerted approach by the countries. Secondly, it will escalate the prices of the goods that we're exporting to the U.S., which can even lead to job losses, uncertainties in market,
yeah.
huge surplus in export goods, which will not have market places to go, and then obviously a desperate look for alternative markets.
Mm. So. Now, perhaps could this be a turning point for SACCO to strengthen intra-Africa trade or look towards more partnerships like the EU, China, or even BRICS, perhaps?
That's a song we always sing, but the melody is different when we actually hit the ground.
Yeah.
The U.S. has got the biggest consumer market. I think it's about $7 trillion.
Hmm.
That tells you that there's no other place where consumption is so high. The currency is very stable and strong, and it means that end goods that goes there will always find a good consumer base, like our charcoal, beef, and those other. One of the key items we trade to the U.S. is mm-hmm. diamonds, uranium.
Yeah, yeah.
That does not really have a SACCO or a Africa market at the moment. And because the level we have to go to refine these products or to create luxury markets for them, gold, for example, we really have a long way to go. But then we should stimulate mineral trade and the establishment of luxury goods markets. If we also look at the BRICS, for example, BRICS is a very novel block mm-hmm. of trade economies.
Yeah.
But each of them still have their own geographical interest in their heart. You're talking about economies that are a little bit selfish in their approach. They are not really willing to liberalize just like that, to let anyone in. But South Africa is the only one who has a favorable trade within BRICS, because they have trade surplus with China. But then Russia's trade with South Africa is more from a services perspective, like the establishment of investment avenues, nuclear power plants, energy sector. And when it comes to commodities and so on, we are not reliant on some of these BRICS members
mm-hmm.
because we don't have the same common commodities
yeah.
that we buy.
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot relinquish our interest with the U.S. And I think that's why I will come back to that one of saying, let's look for a win-win alternative with the U.S. in terms of AGOA. Because AGOA was a good extension.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, emerging and developing countries, or EMDEs, are given preferential recognition when they trade with goods,
mm-hmm.
all the way from WTO level, because of the variance in terms of their development. And they should enjoy these special privileges. And within AGOA, there were about, I think, 50-something, I should check, but the number of AGOA member states means that these are countries, some of them are landlocked.
Yeah.
Therefore, they do not have the same privileges and rights, for example, that countries with ports have. Therefore, there's only a need to create for them that reduced level of preferences or requirements for them to enter the U.S. market. And I think that we cannot really do it without it. Otherwise, you will find it that countries, there are actually 32 AGOA countries.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you find it that each country will go to the U.S. to negotiate their own interests.
Mm.
Isn't that what we are already fighting with the current colonial powers? So divide and conquer and exploitation can happen.
Mm.
Yes.
Now, should, and hopefully this won't be the outcome, should now the desire to engage the U.S. not be fruitful as SACU had hoped, what other alternatives should they consider or could they consider?
I think everybody is hinging on the U.S. trade tariffs as a war, trade war, which means that at some point there has to be a truce and negotiation of both parties. It was when someone enrages such an action or triggers an action to get a response, that's what basically the U.S. did. After immediately announcing this, the countries must come to us and negotiate. I don't think there was an autocratic step to say that the countries are not welcome to us to negotiate this position that they are given. And mind you, the very formula that was applied for using and calculating these tariffs was also not fair enough. Therefore,
yes.
Look at Namibia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We are the perpetrators because we have a surplus with the U.S., which mm-hmm. means we export more to them.
Yeah.
Than we receive from them.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is we are exporting raw minerals, which means value addition takes place in the U.S.
In the U.S. Mm-hmm.
And yes, therefore we have to tell the U.S. that you are wrong. You are taking our raw minerals. You are doing your improvement here.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot replace raw minerals unless you have the same uranium in the country.
Yeah.
Therefore we should be able to negotiate, and they will definitely also negotiate. There are also some sectors where the U.S. actually didn't impose tariffs. Uranium is one of them. So they were not affected.
Mm.
But then the other ones that are struggling is like the sectors in the diamond industry, where we know that De Beers is also busy retiring vessels. It will affect our employment numbers for the mines, which are flagship mines such as Namdeb, De Beers, and those companies. We really rely strongly on the intervention to keep our GDP very stable. Yes, we need to come to the table, and I believe that we are following the right diplomatic path and actually with our capable administration to overcome these kind of current setbacks with the U.S.
Okay. Mr. Rodney, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin and actually educating us on economic matters.
You're welcome. I'm humble.
Okay.
And thank you to the Namibian Nation.
Okay. More news, more insights coming your way right after this. So stick around. You're tuned into On the Radar News Bulletin.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Here, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0683. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now today we are joined by Mr. Richua Rukonga, a representative from the Namibia Industrial Development Agency, also known as NIDA, the state-owned enterprise under the ministry. Now, which is tasked with promoting local industrial development, enterprise growth, and strengthening manufacturing in Namibia. Now, this comes as the Namibia Competition Commission has officially approved a merger allowing Pep Store Namibia, a South African retail giant, to acquire 24 Big Daddy Clothing, which operate 24 outlets across the country. The transaction is set to consolidate Pep's footprint in Namibia's retail market, a move that could have wide-reaching implications for local manufacturers, suppliers, and market competition. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for having me.
Mm. Now, sir, from NIDA's perspective, how does this merger affect the space available for Namibian-made products in the clothing and retail sector?
Well, thank you very much. I think from a general perspective, mm-hmm. I do not think that this merger affects the Namibian-made products in the clothing and retail sector.
Mm-hmm.
I generally see it as an opportunity for Namibian manufacturers or producers to find their space on how they will be able to support or to have their goods, the Namibian-made goods, find their space in the shelves of this of this merger.
Yeah. Now, the Competition Commission has noted that the acquisition will strengthen PEP's market position. What risk does this pose to local SMEs in retail and manufacturing? Now, especially like Dina Palmer. Of course, you say it doesn't really pose, but then how can NIDA also work with PEP stores and similar large retails to actually secure shelf space on supplier contracts for Namibian manufacturers?
Well, thank you very much. I think, obviously, maybe also speaking from, I think NIPDB will be good position, because one of the things that NIPDB does is to create market access, particularly for MSMEs.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be a very good opportunity for the MSMEs to really find how do they plug in terms of supplying of goods and services to this big giant in the clothing industry. Big Namibian local producers such as Dina Palmer, they should definitely find ways on how they will be able to supply the retail industry, and that should be facilitated not by them but also by the opportunity by the government institutions such as the investment board, because one of their mandate is to create market access, particularly for the MSMEs, in terms of ensuring that their goods find space in the shelves of the retail industry. So I think I see it as an opportunity. However, I think as a government and as a country, we need to be quite deliberate when decisions of this nature are taken to make sure that our MSMEs are actually finding space to supply.
Indeed. Now, given that PEP imports most of its goods from South Africa, and speaking of PEP here, not just PEP stores, but also other retailers from South Africa, what could be done to encourage value chain localization within Namibia to boost industrialization? Hypothetically speaking, should this retail stores actually open its doors or an open space be made on their shelves for local entrepreneurs, what can be done to actually help local entrepreneurs to actually be able to meet up to the demand that the retail shops will be asking?
Thank you very much. You see, again, I think as government, we need to be quite deliberate in terms of how do we make sure that some of these products that these entities, I mean, these little shops are putting on their shelves are produced locally. For example, you go in the pet stores, you go in any other shops that are selling clothing, you'll find school uniform.
Yeah.
And this school uniform is imported from somewhere. So as a country, we could be making it a deliberate of making sure that our local manufacturers have got off-take agreements with these particular suppliers so that they are able to produce and then supply the market, so that they are able to produce and supply these shops, so that these shops will then take it and put it on their market. I think those are some of the deliberate approach that we should have as a country, so that we would probably stop, I don't know whether stop is the right word, the importation of some of those goods. Stopping would not be the right word because obviously we belong to SACU, Southern African Customs Union, and definitely there are obligations to that. But definitely we could then create a situation where there is a quota then to say 80% of goods must be sourced locally and only 20% of goods must come from outside.
Or even so opposite, 20 from here, yes. We can start off small.
Yes. So those are some of the opportunities that definitely government will need to push forward to make sure that they put those laws. If you go to other countries, they are quite deliberate. Even smaller countries like Botswana, they are quite deliberate in terms of local produced goods. And many other countries are also quite deliberate. So I think we need to take a position as a government and see how we would position some of these opportunities for our local market.
Indeed. Mr. Rachel, you spoke so well in regards to uniform. One thing I have noticed about PEP uniforms, especially for the young girls, they produce really short, absolutely short skirts that they say it's for a 9 to 10 and it looks like it's for a 3 to 4. And just recently I had to get my daughter's school uniform and I was referred to, single quarters to a lady who makes school uniform. In other words, this particular school uniform is not something that you can find in PEP. But you can find from our local entrepreneurs that are able to actually do it. Now, seeing that Namibia really does have talent, where do we start? As much as we're actually talking about this, of course, yesterday I did have a conversation with a representative from the now Ministry of Industrialization, Mines and Energy. And he says we have to start from them, obviously, but who really is responsible to bring in this on the table? And it goes beyond just talking, actually goes into action.
Well, I think, like I said, it should be a deliberate approach, from government and institutions such as NIDA, institutions such as NIPDB, Ministry of Industrialization, local manufacturer associations, and all of us should probably sit together. And we shouldn't sit together to have a talk. We should sit together to have a plan.
Yeah.
What are some of the opportunities that exist? You would be surprised that, particularly during, I mean, school uniform, you would be surprised that maybe 90% of the school uniform comes from outside. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we need to have a deliberate approach as government entities to drive industrialization. And I'm speaking from an industrialization perspective.
Yeah.
You can't talk of an industrialized country where you still import basic stuff.
Such as school uniforms.
School uniform and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are dreaming about Namibia by the year 2030, Namibia must be an industrialized country.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to that if we can't get the basics well? So, so I think those are some of the basic things that we definitely need to have a conversation on as a government. And it requires one institution to take a lead. It requires one government ministry to take a lead and then say, this is what we need to do. And yes, there is issues of competition commission.
Yeah.
There is issues of what, but these laws are created by us.
Mm-hmm.
And we should not allow the laws that were created by us to
work against us.
Yes, to work against us, to be in to be a stumbling block in going forward with development. We shouldn't allow such a thing. Yeah. So I think basically it calls for a more collaborative effort, discussions, and then I'm sure something could be done.
Indeed. Mr. Ritual, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radio News Bulletin and educating us on matters that actually influence our lives, our everyday lives.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And there you had it from Ritual Rukongo, who is from NIDA. Indeed, when we talk about this discussion, a lot of things actually come to mind. And as he pointed out on school uniforms, something that I had actually not thought about. So Pepe's, a retail shop that whereby we, so many of the parents, when it's a school, beginning of the year, probably January, everybody's flocking there to buy a school uniform for their children. And oftentimes you find that school uniform is out of stock. But hold on, we do have local entrepreneurs right here in Namibia, right at home, who are able to manufacture school uniforms. Of course, there are some shops where you can find school uniforms of locally produced Namibian entrepreneurs. But we're looking for something as penetrating retail market, such as PEP, you know, having acquired now Big Daddy. So who's actually responsible to bring this on the table? Of course, as you had him, I had from him that somebody has to bring it on the table so that then it can be put into place. Are we then looking at the newly appointed ministers in parliament? Are they the ones to bring it on the table? If we're going to talk about value-added addition, if we're going to talk about employment creation, these are the talks that we need to have. And you're also invited to partake in the news bulletin right here on the radar. The studio line is very much open on 0832888401. Here is a platform for you to actually contribute on things that matter most to us, so that who knows, perhaps the ministers are listening, perhaps the right person, the CEO sitting where he is listening, and just your contribution may be just what they need to actually get them running. Now, we take a short trip to the marketplace, and when we return, we'll be back with yet more news. Stay with us.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. And now in other news. A recent policy meeting held in Windhoek has brought renewed national focus to the preservation and revitalization of Namibia's indigenous languages, many of which are at risk of extinction. In an age defined by globalization and digital dominance, the survival of ethnic and minority languages remains a contentious and urgent issue. Now, according to the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, thousands of indigenous languages globally are either endangered or teetering on the brink of extinction. Namibia is no exception. The Windhoek engagement sought to highlight the cultural and communal value of indigenous languages while providing a platform for policymakers, academics, and community advocates to begin charting a path toward preserving this vital linguistic identities. Now, speaking at the event, Rejoice Amtenya, the project assistant for the International Decade of Indigenous Languages from 2022 to 2030 at UNESCO, said there is encouraging momentum from both government and civil society stakeholders in Namibia. And I quote, "There is a growing drive from government and relevant partners to get the ball rolling on indigenous language preservation," Amutinya said. She emphasized that without deliberate and appropriate policy intervention, languages at risk will continue to disappear, along with the unique knowledge, systems, oral traditions, and cultural heritage embedded within them. Let's take a listen to Rejoice Amutinya.
Thank you again for those introductions. That was a very lively, very needed, I think, kind of discussion or interaction for this kind of session. Because, I mean, it just reminds me of how very diverse we are and how much we should appreciate our languages and our cultures and our diversity. And I think sometimes we don't realize that as Namibia, because we're so blessed to be in this country that is so amazing already. I mean, the people just adds to that incredibleness. And I think we need to embrace that more. I think for me, there's nothing better than, for example, being in some part of the world. And I remember one day somebody coming to me and saying, you know, very excited, you know, I heard a language on the street. Somebody was speaking, or two people were speaking, two ladies. They're speaking a very strange language. I'm like, how do you sound that? Like? I don't know, it was just like clicks and what. I'm like, oh my God, I was so happy to be, you know, saying that, oh my God, those are my people, they're from my country. Never mind that they could have been from South Africa or Botswana, but I was like, I blame them. I was like, oh, those are my people. So it's such a wonderful feeling. I started my first for me and I started that. Both a whole lot of communities together, people from indigenous communities. Stakeholders in the indigenous knowledge space. We all convened in Machuaro in July last year. And this was to give them space to discuss on the safeguarding of Namibian indigenous languages and indigenous knowledge contribution to scientific knowledge. So the engagement was held under the theme Indigenous Voices, Pathways to a Sustainable Future. And through the discussions, we were then able to gain some insights basically of what people wanted this to look like, and this is what enabled us then to develop the National Action Plan, and this is what we came up with. So when it comes to portraying the themes of the National Action Plan, we use the analogy of the Marula tree, which is an endemic tree to Namibia, and it's very significant for Namibia. This tree stands for a powerful metaphor which embodies six interconnected themes concerning the safeguarding of indigenous languages and indigenous knowledge. And so, just like the Marula tree, its roots are anchored firmly in the earth, languages anchor communities in their cultural heritage with its accumulated wisdom, traditions of generations. So, there were many challenges and proposed strategies to each theme, but I've highlighted just a few for each theme. So we can go on to the next slide. So the first theme that would be for the National Action Plan was on documentation and research. So basically, the documentation of indigenous languages and knowledge forms the basis for further development in the sectors such as education, social and natural sciences, as well as agriculture. So the challenge that we picked up from the discussions, for example, were that the minority group's history is not captured, right? So when we go to our textbooks, etc., we find history of the other dominant groups, which is well captured, although maybe not also adequate to cover, but it is very difficult to get the world. There's also a danger of extinction, of course, of the history and everything else that comes with it, if this is not captured well and documented well. Partnerships between communities and knowledge institutions is also not formalized. As much as it is there, it exists, it's just not
formalized or regulated. Strategies in this theme are that we want, for example, language standardization and development. We were talking about how we have some languages who are at certain levels of development. Some are quite well developed, but others are not even near anyway. Some are actually not even written. So the idea is to actually bring out all Namibian languages and get them to a level where they are standardized so that everybody belonging to those communities or any other Namibian citizen who would like to learn that language would have access to material, would have access to some kind of audio or some kind of media products that they can learn the language so that we don't lose it. So the reason is we need to capture these languages so that we don't lose it, as you can see that they are becoming skills day by day. Documenting of indigenous knowledge again, very, very important. So this is another strategy that we keep a pretty close in mind. And then conducting documenting indigenous language and indigenous knowledge research. So in two, it talks about learning, right? So that was the theme that we picked up again during this discussion, that strengthening the learning ecology in indigenous languages, in particular minority and endangered languages, has been considered to be one of the highest priorities throughout stakeholder consultation. So the challenges here were that no extracurricular and lifelong learning programs were available. So of course when, for example, kids especially, they want to capture them with something that interests them. So if you've got extracurricular activities where you teach them languages or something about culture and whatnot, that's probably the time to do your best way to capture their attention. So that's missing. We have lack of early early childhood development centers. Thank you. We also have children who are not speaking their own indigenous languages, as it was said in some discussion. Almost all subjects are not taught in indigenous languages. We did know again, as I said earlier, that the government is trying to push for this. And it's up to us to really recognize the benefits of this. And then the lack of educators trained in IP and indigenous knowledge and indigenous languages. So we have a lot of teachers who are actually trained in the languages so that we can transfer that knowledge or that language to their students. And the strategies for this theme would be then to ensure that sociocultural inclusion in the school system is maintained. It's also to establish a language institute and resource centers. And as you have learned from the ELAN presentation, that's definitely their aim. It's also to establish inclusive early childhood development. So I think we talked about health and well-being. It's about the ability to use indigenous language and traditional practices directly. It's the well-being of community members. It's very important that multilingualism and multiculturalism are embraced.
Also contributing to the discussions was Martin Matsubi from the Endangered Languages Association of Namibia, also known as ELAN, who stressed the cultural richness and identity embedded in Namibia's linguistic diversity. He noted that the value of local languages goes beyond communication. They are vehicles of heritage, storytelling, and identity, particularly in indigenous communities. The event marked an early but significant step in what organizers hope will become a coordinated, well-funded national effort to document, teach, and revitalize endangered languages before they disappear entirely.
Yeah, in that sense, when our community dialogues, we have established that because nationally we have got approximately 13 or 14 languages in Namibia. I'm readying myself for a fight now. And assumption when we went up there was that we have these 30 languages, of which the main indigenous African languages are Osidonga Osukwanyama, Osierra, Kwekwe Koba, Setswana, Afrikaans, once it renewed, 67. So, yeah, and Xilosi, sorry, and Xilosi and Kabamba. And when we went out there, we realized that we have got approximately 50 languages or dialects or vernaculars, whatever you would like to call it in Namibia. And in
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo. Ndele ouna osheendiso. Ouna aniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka ina onjodoe otaende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, Autocash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye eto pewa epresenda ya 45 dongushu yoshiendiso shoye. Muule ashike wemitetilo 45. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga o hauto yoye ashike. Mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tudengera nena ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko Autocash.
And now we resume.
Bambo culture alone, we have realized that we only thought that there are only two main languages, the Osindonga and the Osukwanyama. But our investigation revealed in the community dialogues that the Bambo has got approximately 6 to 8 different dialects. And these Bambo people do not even understand each other. But that we have got the Osumbaja, we have got the Okwapi, and then we have got the Oborongati. But what is mainstream by the education system is the Osindonga and the Osukwanyama languages. We even have done a desktop review, and we have realized in the Zambezi region, Silosi is not a local language of the Gabonians. It's a language that has been imported from Zambia or and Botswana. And they have got their own languages that they speak. The Mafwe speak Mafwe. The Basubia has got their own language. And they have got these small tribes that have got their own language. And yeah, Mahei, etc. This is what we picked up, and there are approximately 50. But what is mainstream in the education system is the Xhosa, because it is for material, it is highly publicized, etc. Now, for us, as a population of 3 million people, it's quite a big ask for a government to promote 50 indigenous languages. It will be very costly and a huge exercise. But I would like us to focus on this one, and this is the basis. This forms the basis of our community dialogues. Our community dialogues were based on these 6 categories of UNESCO or the classification of endangered languages. The first category, and possibly the biggest category, is what we call the languages that are extinct. Now, extinct languages are languages where there are no living speakers. Nobody left. Note the recordings from the atlas. Now, in Namibia, fortunately, we do not have an extinct language. But in Northern Cape, just across the border, we have got a sub language called the Mo language, Oma Katrina Esso is the only, if she didn't pass away by now, is the only living speaker of that language. And she had been teaching this language to her grandchildren, to her granddaughter, currently, to document the language, and so that at least there should be a vestige of remainder of such a language there. We have the second group, which we call the critically endangered. Now, the critically endangered languages are the youngest speakers, are grandparents, and older, and they speak the language partially or infrequently. Now, this critically endangered language is, we do not have such a language in Namibia, where we have the language spoken by grandparents and older people, but they speak it only partially or infrequently. But we have a severely endangered indigenous languages. Can I read? The language is spoken by grandparents and older generations, while the parents of the grandparents and older generations, while the parent generation also speak the language. Now, this one is a quota. This is the language that Uncle Lawrence will tell us it's in his area. Now, the Kwe. The Kwe language is severely endangered. And it's only the elderly people that speak the language. The young people are trying to learn the language. This language is not taught in schools. There are no teachers trained in this language. There are no materials. The language does not have a dictionary. I don't know, Uncle Lawrence, what you say, but there is possibly a dictionary being developed for the language, for the Kwe language. And then we have the next one, the Haino. The Haino were assimilated by the Damaras. The Haino, if you remember, they became the Damaras. The language is only known by the chiefs and the traditional people. Yeah, but the younger people, the parents and the younger generation do not speak the language. Most of them, they converse in Tamara language. That's a Haiti. So those are the two languages that are severely endangered in the region. So they are actually at stage of extinction. If something is not drastically done, teachers are not trained, and this is introduced in the formal curriculum, these languages, actually Haiti is disappearing. Yeah, but for the Kwe, there are some efforts being made to revive, but we do not know about the Haino. So that's it. And then we have got definitely a danger. Definitely a danger. Children no longer learn the language as a mother tongue in the old.
Don't go too far. We are taking a quick breather and then we are diving right back in today's top news. This is On the Radar.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Kamango East Governor Julius Hambuka this morning addressed the graduation ceremony of 330 nurses at Alba Chipamba, where he highlighted the growing need for more healthcare professionals in Namibia. He warned that by 2030, the country could face a critical shortage of nurses if proactive measures are not taken. The graduating nurses came from three campuses, Lovers Bay, Rundu, and Oshikango.
Countless challenges to get to this point and deserve a severe that moment of achievement. I want to extend my heartfelt congratulations to each and every of you, and I hope that this day marks the beginning of a long and rewarding journey in your nursing career. According to the World Health Organization report, it was estimated that there will be a shortage of 7.2 million health workers to deliver the healthcare services worldwide. And by 2035, the demand of nursing will reach 12.9 million. According to the report from the International Council of Nurses, shortage of nurses continues to be a global concern. This shortage continues to create a global health emergency even today. The current global shortage of nurses and midwives is more than 50%, and this shortage has had a telling effect on provisions of health, like higher morbidity and mortality rate among our population. In May 2024, World Health Organization reported that there are an estimate of 29 million nurses worldwide and 2.2 million midwives. However, it is expected that an estimated shortage of 4.5 million nurses and 3.81 million midwives by the year 2030. That will bring the global shortage of health workers estimated for 2030 to 4.8 million nurses and midwives, with the greatest gap found in the countries in Africa, Southeast Asia, and the world's Eastern Mediterranean region, as well as some parts of Latin America. Our country is also not immune to this shortage that the nation is faced with inadequate staffing at all levels, such as emergency department, maternity department, as well as our rural clinics. The Minister of Health and Social Services has been struggling with staff shortages. Operating at only 60% capacity, as reported in March 2022. The 2022 healthcare workforce status report provided a comprehensive look at the staffing situation in public health facilities, including both government and donor-funded healthcare workers at all levels of the health service delivery system. The ministry has 21,138 posts in the approval staff establishment, but only 13,029 are filled. Nurses and midwives play a pivotal role in improving health and thus contributing to the wider economic growth of the country. Investigating in theme is imperative to achieve efficient, effective, resilient, and sustainable healthcare system. Subsequently, they do not only provide essential care, but also play a critical role in shaping healthcare policies and driving primary healthcare service beyond. Nurses and midwives deliver healthcare services in emergency settings and safeguard the sustainability of health system globally. Ladies and gentlemen, we should be cognizant.
Let's pause here now for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back shortly with yet more news. Stay with us.
Kids, no running. They grow up so fast.
Come here, guys. Who wants to watch the favorite show on GoTV?
Your family's favorite moments are made better with GoTV's shows. We've got loads of local, international, and kids' channels, and all the football you need from the comfort of your home.
You can also watch your favorite shows wherever you are with GoTV Stream. Stick with GoTV and let's go together. GoTV. Love it.
And they're grateful of the fact that the nursing professions absorb the majority of the girl child after high school. Globally, nursing employs 67% of the health workforce are women, and compared to other employment sectors, which takes only 40%. In Namibia,
and now we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be bringing you what's making headlines in today's economic indicators.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you...
And now on some economic indicators. on agricultural commodity today, the top commodity losers are cheese at -7.84%, with rapeseed at -1.20% and wheat at 0.77%. Gains are led by rice at 2.22% and oats at 0.52%. On metal commodities, the top commodity losers are copper at -1.59%, iron ore at -1.36%, and gold at -0.92%. On energy commodity, top commodity losers are natural gas, UK GBP at -0.92%, natural gas AU Dutch at -0.90%, and natural gas at -0.75%. Gains are led by crude oil, WTI at 0.26%, and Brent crude oil at 0.07%. Now, the Netherlands trade surplus narrowed to 12.45 billion euros in March 2025. That is from 13.33 billion euros a year earlier. Imports advanced by 3.7% year on year to 59.15 billion euros, driven by increased purchases from both 3.7% euro and non-EU, from EU and non-EU countries at 4%. Now, among commodities, notable gains were seen in food and live animals at 18%, raw materials at 8.2%, and chemical products at 14.1%. Meanwhile, exports grew at a softer pace of 1.7% to 71.6 billion euros, with sales rising to both EU, that is European countries, at 0.9% and non-EU countries at 3%. Exports growth was particularly strong in food and live animals at 11.4%, animal and vegetable oils at 12.8%, and chemical products at 10.4%. For the first time in 3 months of the year, the trade surplus decreased to 34.43 billion euros from 36.45 billion euros in the corresponding period last year. Have you downloaded the Eagle FM app yet? Well, do stay connected to your favorite shows and podcasts all at your fingertips. All you have to do is search for Eagle FM Namibia on the App Store or Google Play and never miss a moment. We are now stepping away for a brief moment, but we'll be right back with more to share. And when we do return, we'll be bringing you news beyond the borders.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hand.
The Central Energy
Behold,
Fund has
the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsin Ehangano, The Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics in Manikamaruga, the Africans, Sangfuar, Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders. We start off in South Africa and other regional countries. Then we move on to continental news. Thereafter, we bring you international news. Now, the Central Energy Fund has transferred assets to SANPC, that is in South Africa.
The Central Energy Fund has handed over leased assets and 5 billion rand in funding to operationalize the newly established South African National Petroleum Company. According to CEF Group Chair Ayanda Noah, the best viable model for the transaction was by lease and assignment.
We came with a new process that we also believe has never been done in the world, the lease and assign model. And so what happens with the lease and assign model is that we have now an opportunity to ring fence all the assets that are currently not viable. We ring fence them, we leave them behind. And in this case, it's specifically the refinery at Mossel Bay under PetroSA that is ring fenced. It's left behind with the people so that we can have it attended to and fixed. And then the other assets that are in a good condition are then leased across to the SNPC. So that they can be leveraged and ensure that we are able to trade as the SNPC. In that process also, there is an opportunity to pay these amounts back to the legacy companies so that they can get some remuneration for having given the SNPC the assets to be leased in order to do their business.
SANPC CEO Godfrey Mwahi says the South African National Petroleum Company will focus on stabilizing the organization as it charts its way into becoming a national energy champion.
The immediate challenge is to stabilize the organization. I think sometimes we get excited and we want to chase growth while there is a leakage behind. So we need to make sure that we close the back door. There is no leakages. And the second thing that we need to do, we need to make sure that we've got robust governance processes. Because we made mistakes in the past, right? We corrected those mistakes and we acknowledge where we made mistakes. But actually, there are a lot of good things that we have done. And I think one thing that we don't do well is to talk about the good things that we do. And actually, we keep on saying we need to learn to tell our own narrative. SFF actually was pretty robust and running well. I guess pretty robust and running well. There were challenges with PetroSA, and we are awake to the fact that we're going to have to deal with those challenges and make sure that we actually are writing a different narrative as we go forward. So we're not going to leave them alone. The next wave, which is a phase two, will actually be dealing with bringing those assets that we left behind and the employees across to SNPC so that we've got one single national oil company.
The SANPC says after a series of consultation between organized labor and non-organized labor representatives, 402 employees have been transferred to the new company and are subject to a 12-month cooling off period to avoid any job losses during the transition period. SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, mining production in South Africa has declined by 2.8% in March.
The largest negative contributors for the latest production figures were platinum group metals and gold. The lower gold production in March coincides with a time when gold prices were hitting all-time highs.
It's a pity that we, you know, that the production from our, you know, our old, you know, very deep mines, predominantly operated by Harmony and Sibanye, that, you know, their production was also impacted by, there were a few fatalities, unfortunately, during the quarter. sector. And Sibanye's production has really been a big disappointment in the gold sector. I mean, Harmony has really run its complex deep mines a lot better than Sibanye over the last few years. Now, and you continue to see operational challenges at Sibanye's mines.
Proctor says the declines in gold and PGMs were also to be expected, given heavy rainfall that had taken place in the north of the country, and that platinum miners had generally not been producing at their optimum in recent times.
Production reports from the platinum miners were pretty weak generally. I mean, again, you did see certain operational issues, such as mining through lower grade reefs, but still, from Anglo American Platinum. I mean, their Amanda, one of the shafts at their Amandible mine flooded in February, so you would have seen that impact continue into March as they tried to, get the water out of the shaft and be able to restart mining. So, I mean, there wasn't too much in terms of operational issues.
The latest production
go big this Easter with extra low prices at WB. Get a 1 kg Yum Yum Peanut Spread Tub for $59.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $74.99 with Smart Buy. 1.8 litre Farmhouse Ice Cream for a sweet $39.99. 1 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $33.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 Sheet 1 Ply Toilet Rolls for $34.99. See all our exciting Easter specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Let's now resume in regards to mining production declining by 2.8% in March.
Issues.
The latest March mining production print is the fifth consecutive monthly decline on an annual basis, and there are concerns that it may end up contributing negatively to the first quarter GDP number.
In fact, mining output shrank by 4.5% on a quarter-on-quarter basis.
The Central Energy Fund has handed...
worse than the 0.7% decline in the previous quarter, making it a key drag on GDP growth for the first quarter.
While the gold price has been the star player in terms of commodity price increases, it's very much subject to market sentiment, which is currently highly variable in an uncertain global economic environment, having declined to around $3,100 an ounce currently, compared to the heady number of $3,500 an ounce achieved in recent weeks. Nompumelelo Siziba, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Lesotho-EU partnership exploring new avenues for cooperation.
Lesotho Prime Minister Sam Matikane has welcomed the European Union delegation in Maseru. That's more than half of the 27 EU member states who are in Maseru as part of the celebration of the Europe Month. The highlight of the Lesotho EU celebrations will see the signing of three transformative programs to the tune of 10 million euros. Approximately 205 million rands. These projects are earmarked for an inclusive Lesotho renewable energy and the cooperation facility and support measures for civil society. Europe says they are in the Mountain Kingdom to pledge their unwavering commitment to the Lesotho EU's decades-long solidarity, collaboration and mutual growth. This year's occasion is significant as it commemorates 25 years of the African Union, European Union partnership, an intercontinental alliance that has championed peace, sustainable development, and people-centered government. Both parties wish to see mutual and meaningful benefits. For more on this, we're joined by Head of EU Mission in Lesotho, Ambassador Paula Amadai. Very good evening to you. Thank you for your time, Ambassador. The EU delegation is in Maseru. As we look to the important celebrations that will be taking place, how significant is such a development? All across.
Thank you very much for your interest. Every year we celebrate a partnership dialogue. It's an opportunity to look back at what has happened in the course of the year and plan for the future. It's an opportunity to look at the situation at regional and global level. and check our notes. So this year the interest is related to the fact that we had the largest ever delegation from European member states in Maseru. As you have mentioned it, 14 delegations came from Pretoria to take part in this exercise. And indeed, traditionally, the dialogue is also accompanied by a cooperation event, the launch of the yearly cooperation program, and to the tune this year of 16 million euro, that is 337 million rand. So at the same time, we look at political development, at regional and global affairs, trade relation, but also at the Lesotho EU cooperation program.
So with the EU being a vital partner for Lesotho for decades, and, you know, we're looking at providing humanitarian aid to diplomatic engagement through initiatives like the recently signed Samoa Agreement, how best should one interpret this growing and strengthening of relations between the country?
The European Union has had a formal relation with Lesotho for the past 50 years. In 2026, we will celebrate our anniversary. And every year, we try to infuse new energy into the relation. We continue, we are a long-standing partner of Lesotho, but we try our best also to explore new avenues for cooperation and to, as good friends and good partners do.
So, with the US no longer a reliable partner and Lesotho now listed among countries in which the Trump administration wants to close its embassies, canceling of aid, imposing those steep tariffs, and the threat that could have on Lesotho's already embattled textile sector, do you think that this is now providing an opportunity for the EU? Is there an opportunity in terms of expansion and leverage?
I think it's a mutual opportunity to look better maybe at some of the avenues of cooperation that in the past have not been used to their full potential. I'm thinking, for instance, to the economic partnership agreement between the SADC country and the EU. Lesotho, like the other SADC country, enjoys full quota and tariff-free access to the European market, the largest single market in the world. Yet the Economic Partnership Agreement, or EPA in short, is not yet a household name in Lesotho. Mm. And we will be happy to see a more diversified export offer from Lesotho to the European Union. Already now, trade with the European Union contribute to the wealth of the country. We have Lesotho enjoy a large surplus in its export to the European Union.
Meanwhile, the government of Zambia says it will introduce a new bill to parliament that will classify the privilege of medicine as an economic crime.
With recent happenings in Zambia's health sector, where the U.S. government cut about 1.4 billion kwacha of its annual support, interventions are being put in place to win back investor confidence in the country. Today, A group of cabinet ministers held a high-level meeting with members of the diplomatic corps to update them on the forensic audit into the theft of medicines. Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation Minister Mulambo Haimbe informed the diplomats that government has concluded the forensic audit into the theft of medicines.
The President of the Republic of Zambia himself has taken particular and keen interest in this matter. And the timeline has been such that from the initial concerns that were raised, steps were taken in consultation with some of you, our cooperating partners, to put in place a mechanism through a forensic audit of identifying where these challenges in the health sector have arisen and where they sit.
And Acting Home Affairs Minister Ambrose Lufuma said government plans to enforce laws that would deter pilferage of medicine.
This sort of situation and instituted measures, this is why there were terms of reference that we're talking about, that there is supposed to be a forensic audit, and all that is meant to ensure that we put a stop to this pilferage.
Health Minister Elijah Muchima was also present.
Anybody who steals medicines is a killer. Total killer. All of us stand to condemn such habits. What has been happening in the past should be given a stop with immediate effect.
And Egyptian Ambassador to Zambia, Mayada Essam, commended government for undertaking a forensic audit in the health sector.
So we commend the Zambian government for their response, quick and decisive response without any interference from our side. And we are looking forward to extend the drug deal or renew it and continue our cooperation in that side.
I commend the government and His Excellency the President for the very bold step of commissioning not just a forensic audit by but outsourcing it to a globally renowned firm who has a fantastic record around the world and in Zambia.
The diplomats have pledged their commitment to supporting Zambia's health sector. Doreen Chembe, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
It's being reported in Turkey that two meetings will take place today as part of diplomatic efforts.
Stakeholders ramp up efforts to transform Africa's rail system.
The first is due to start at 7:45 GMT, so in under an hour's time. And
the continent from Egypt to South Africa, massive developments are transforming the rail landscape. The upgrading of trade corridors and introduction of new high-speed trains are redefining the movement of goods and people, something rail companies were upbeat about at the Africa Rail Conference in Johannesburg.
And if you look at Morocco, we have delivered Africa's first high-speed train, 350 kilometers of running very efficiently. We have seen Egypt moving into the phase where they will start implementing their own high-speed train. We see South Africa is at inception talking about how do we make this possible.
The advancements positions the rail sector as a vital economic building block and an enabler to the much-anticipated African Free Trade Area. According to the African Union, intracontinental trade remains way below 20%, a trend the continent is set on changing in the next few decades.
We should see the development and the upgrade of rail on the continent as a whole as a very positive development to facilitate trade amongst ourselves as African partners. We obviously would be very interested as a manufacturing hub, and of course we are also very interested in receiving imports from our neighbours that could also help our own domestic trade and industry to develop.
To realize this vision, massive capital injection and close cooperation is required with global partners such as China and the U.S., as well as private players.
I think for me, it's making sure that we see these alternatives, finance instrumentation, as a strength than as a weakness. We need to create skills in the country so that when we're constructing and operating these railways, they're not just only for the time when we're building, and operating, but they stay and they are sustainable.
Stumbling blocks, however, remain in the upkeep of trains and railway lines, a cost many countries are unable to carry. While the introduction of digital technologies poses a challenge in countries with old and outdated systems.
It's about how do we use AI, first of all, in making sure that we are protecting and securing the infrastructure that we are investing into. But second to that is also just making sure that we're using technology to be able to predict what possible breakdowns and maintenance and how is tech going to be able to also ensure the long lifespan of the infrastructure.
Rail nevertheless provides a cheap and reliable mode of transport for passengers and trade once the trains hit the track. If Africa is to move away from roads and advance towards becoming a trade powerhouse, it will have to work harder at building more efficient networks. Jilishara Sishtien, South Africa.
The future is rail. That is the overarching message.
Meanwhile, China and Morocco sign a two partnership agreement.
The first partnership involves Bank of Africa and Jiangxi Geoengineering Investment Group. The agreement reflects China's growing interest in the Moroccan market and highlights a shared ambition to position the kingdom as a strategic gateway for investment across Africa.
Today, we are witnessing an important evolution of the economic ties between China and Morocco. The visit of this delegation has allowed us to sign two partnerships between a Chinese investment firm and a Moroccan bank to accompany some Chinese investments on the African continent.
The second agreement, signed by Morocco Cooper Pharma and China's Jemincare Pharmaceutical Group, aims to develop innovative therapeutic solutions, enhance industrial capabilities, and promote technology exchange.
The second convention is also very important and structuring for the infrastructure and sanitary sovereignty of the kingdom. It will allow us to make products and active ingredients for Moroccan pharmaceuticals thanks to this cooperation.
Experts say the growing cooperation between the two countries is bearing tangible fruit in the form of diversified Chinese investments.
Chinese investments in Morocco are growing considerably. Their total exceeds $10 billion in main technological sectors like automobile and auto part manufacturing in Tangier. There are also several ongoing projects between the two countries in promising domains involving the latest technology. This industrial partnership is set to create tens of thousands of new jobs throughout Morocco.
China is Morocco's third-largest trading partner worldwide and the largest in Asia. There's been growing interest among Chinese companies in the Moroccan market, particularly the automotive, renewable energy, textile and agro-industry sectors. Adnan Shoueshi, CGTN.
Now this week, a group of 59 white South Africans arrived in the U.S. where they've been granted refugee status. President Donald Trump says the refugee applications were expedited because they're victims of racial discrimination. The South African government denies this. Afrikaners settled in South Africa nearly four centuries ago and led the apartheid movement there. Usually it takes years for the government to process refugees. This group waited just 3 months. Let's go to our North America correspondent, Namia Iqbal, now, who has been speaking exclusively to one of these men who is resettling in Buffalo, New York. Namia, what did he have to say?
This is the first time we've heard from one of those Afrikaners that is now seen as a refugee here in America. Charles Kleinhaus is 46 years of age. He comes from a beautiful province in South Africa, a lovely farmland. And now he lives in a budget hotel near a highway with his two children and very young grandson. So the change in life could not be starker. But he said to me that he had to do it for safety reasons. Mr. Kleinhaus has also come under particular scrutiny given that old posts of his, which are anti-Jewish, have been found, and it's led to all these questions about were these people properly vetted, as refugees often are. The Department of Homeland Security said to us today they were vetted. Nonetheless, it has raised these questions, and Mr. Kleinhaus defended those posts to me, but he also defended his right, as he sees it, to be here in America as a refugee.
If you're white, you're wrong in South Africa. You're a land thief,
you are a racist. The whole time it's being told, and there is racist white people, plenty of them.
You say you're not a racist white
person. No, not at all. I've got many black friends. I think I've got more African black men as friends, as white friends. I'm tired of being told, just because I'm white, I'm a thief. Just because I'm white, I'm wrong in this. I had nothing to do with apartheid. Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Is there anything specific that's happened, Charles, that made you think, I've got to get out of here? I've got to leave.
After the death threats and stuff and my machinery being cut up, and I'm still, after reporting everything to the police, not getting any protection or anything like that, the only thing that's left on my farm is a sign that says mining area. All the fences has been taken off. Boom gates has been broken off.
There are voices out there, including the South African president, who has called you cowards.
Yeah.
You've got other Afrikaners who are saying that you're not refugees, you're opportunists, that you've abandoned the country. What would you say to those people?
I had to leave a 5-bedroom house, which I will lose now because I'm not going to pay for it, behind, my car behind, my dogs behind, my mother behind. It is not, I didn't come here for fun, but my children are safe.
What was it like when you got off the shuttle bus and came into that hangar and were greeted by the Trump administration?
Oh, it was overwhelming. I didn't expect that because I thought we're going to be in a shuttle bus, taken somewhere, and we must start working. All of us that is there, we know we're going to start here from the bottom because we are the new people here. We're going to start from the bottom, 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 bottom.
Do you ever worry that you might be caught up in some big political game here? That you're a pawn somehow?
Yeah, it's a scary, scary thing, but people mustn't think we're just taking advantage of this. We're coming here to make a contribution to the country.
Old tweets of yours have been dug up, yeah, in which you appear to have made anti-Semitic comments, yeah, and so people are questioning, should you be here? Yeah, what would you say to that?
I would like them...
What would you like to clarify?
I've deleted the comment, but I was actually thinking I should have not deleted it. If you can look where I commented on, it was Passover, the Orthodox Jews, and I'm Christian, were spitting and screaming and bumping Christians walking with the cross. For me, as a Christian, that is not acceptable. In Israel, and I went and I said something on Twitter, which I copy and pasted from somebody else's page, because if you go read my post, you'll see it's not the way I write.
So you had quoted someone else. I mean, the quotes...
I copied and pasted
it. The quotes, yeah, were anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
They said Jews are dangerous people, they're untrustworthy, they're not God's chosen people.
I was super angry.
So you did it out of anger?
Yeah. And I was in hospital at that point of time. I was on morphine. But that's not an excuse.
Drugs don't make you an anti-Semite, do they?
Even now, if I would see any person going against my religion, I will speak up against it.
You have high hopes being here in America. Is there a part of you that is anxious that it might not work out?
No, to be honest with you, because of my belief.
And now we have come to the conclusion of today's On The Radar News Bulletin. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by David Shambe. Also, do stay tuned for other programs such as The Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. And if you want to continue to listen to the sound of my voice, do tune in for an episode on life lessons Saturday from 1900 hours to 2100 hours, where we talk about things that matter into the society. Now, from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow.
Audio mnangeshefa nwahara kushigifa oma akuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM enyamukuro olongaha ninge kwatafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita tuimwe heali imwe ne heali imwe imwe nohamano. That is 0817147116 mamberewa konorahita tunatu mbali ohetatu vatatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device,
You can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies,